The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So this morning I would like to talk about generosity. And I read somewhere recently that it's possible that historically theme of generosity is the most popular theme for Buddhist Dharma talks and commentary down through the ages, more than anything else. And if we look at that, look upon that in a favorable light, then it shows the centrality and the great importance that generosity has for Buddhism, for Buddhist practice. It's a great topic. And I feel like I have been transformed or changed by my encounter with the teachings and practices of generosity in Buddhism. And there's two maybe ideas that I would like to get across today, simple ideas. And that is that the practice of generosity or the movements of generosity can be of two general types. One is that it's a practice of generosity. So a practice means you do it even if you don't want to, because you see it as a practice. It's an exercise. It's a way, you might not want to go to the gym, but you go to the gym to train. It's a train. Generosity, practice generosity is a way to train oneself in ways that are beneficial for yourself and for your society. So generosity as a practice. The other is that generosity as an expression of the innate goodness of your heart or your inner life, yourself. And in Buddhism, where liberation of the heart is the point, that liberation of the heart allows that goodness to be expressed. And so generosity is just a way of expressing that goodness. And then part of the task of Buddhism is certainly to awaken the goodness in our heart, to liberate it, but also to recognize it. So if we recognize it, then that part of us, we can then have more capacity to express. So two things. So generosity as a practice, generosity as a natural expression. So I'll come to that, but that's one of the things I hope to leave you. I thought if I say that at the beginning and then later, that then there's some hope that maybe you'll remember something from the talk. I hear it's good pedagogical technique. So this generosity is a great topic, and when I was thinking about it and thinking that if there's magic in Buddhism, or something that's the closest to Buddhism is magic, how things work magically. Magically meaning that it works kind of in an unseen world, the cause and effect relationships. We don't necessarily see directly how it affects things, but it has big effects. And it's like, wow, how did they do that? So there's two primary things that are involved in Buddhist magic, if you like magic. One is the practice of generosity, and the other is the practice of kindness or loving kindness. Those two things have a huge impact, and sometimes it's kind of like magical how it works. How did that work? Over the years that I've been a teacher, it's pretty common for people come to me and talk about their challenges with difficult people in their lives. So sometimes it has to do, a common one has been mother-in-laws. Sometimes it has to do with someone's boss, some difficult person at work. And so I'll listen, and sometimes I'll offer some advice or support or for them. But sometimes what I've suggested to them is that give a gift to this difficult person. And sometimes their eyes go wide. You got to be kidding. I'm serious. Don't make it too dramatic, but when you come to your mother-in-law's house, be sure to come carrying something and give it to her. Or to your boss or coworker, make sure you do something that feels generous. And many times after, not always, but many times after I've given this advice, people come back to me and said, "Wow, I don't know if it was, I don't know if that's the reason, but things shifted after I started doing that. It was magic." They don't use the word magic, but things shifted. I've had that experience with people, that somehow as the movement of generosity, the movement of sharing something to someone, giving something they weren't expecting, elicits a change of heart in them. It's kind of hard to kind of see you in the particular way they had before. That it opens their heart, opens their kindness, opens their friendliness, opens their, somehow, their goodwill to you. So kindness is the same way. I've seen many times where, it happened this summer once, where I had a difficult relationship with someone. I didn't really know what to do, and I was kind of perplexed. And I decided I would just take refuge in kindness. I'll just be kind. And when I decided to be kind, I didn't have a chance to even do it. Because when I saw the person, I did, but before I had a chance to do it, the person that I was having challenged with was relaxed and open and friendly. What happened? Maybe that person had gone through the same soul searching as I did and decided that to try this kindness thing. And it was, it was like magic. How did that happen? So magic. So Buddhist magic. So here's a story of a folk tale. There were farmers, a husband and wife, who had a new baby daughter born. And so, as was the custom in that time and place, they went to the local astrologer to hear about the future of this daughter. And the astrologer said, well, she'll have a very happy life and be very successful in her youth and you'll be a very wonderful daughter until she gets married. And then on her the night of her marriage, she'll die. So the parents never told the daughter this, but they went through their life, the parents kind of knew this was the deal. So sure enough, on her marriage day, why would you marry her? Anyway, so the folktale goes along that so she's getting married, and there was a marriage feast afterwards, and everyone was feasting and celebrating. The parents too, I wonder about the story. But you know, it's a folk tale, so you have to kind of go along with magic and strange things. And so, as these stories goes, a very poor beggar came knocking on the door of the party. And either people were too busy to notice, or people kind of thought this is a kind of bad luck for the party and shooed the beggar away, or were angry, and just didn't want nothing to do with the beggar. Except, of course, the bride. And the bride took a plate of food from the feast and brought it out to the beggar and said, "Here, you can have this, please." So the feast was over, the bride and groom went off to do what they do, and the next morning she was still alive. And so the farmers went back to the astrologer. Said, "What happened?" And the astrologer said, "Well, certainly the stars and everything predicted that her fate was to be to die on the night of her wedding, but there was one thing that can change her fate, and that was an act of generosity." And so one of the questions I first thought of was, why didn't he say that up front? And the answer I have for that, my own question, is that it wouldn't have been generosity if they had been told. If that, we got to give, because if it's just a matter of giving, they could have given a lot of gifts. Giving is not necessarily generous. So even looks like a gift. It's, if it's done out of fear, done for these ulterior motives, done for an exchange, done for, so you don't die, like we've got to do this, then I don't know if it's really coming from a place of generosity. Generosity is to give what is not expected. Generosity is to give in circumstances where it's not understood as an exchange. There's gift giving, which is an exchange, but generosity does not come with the idea of an exchange. And so they had to just, the astrologer couldn't say anything so about that part. It had to just kind of take its course. And so luckily it worked out well. Another little folk tale from the Buddhist tradition has to do with a monk, mendicant monk, renunciant, didn't have much. Monks have robes, and basically just robes and a little bag of a few things like medicine and book maybe, and then they have a begging bowl, an alms bowl they go around. That's how they gather the food, is they walk through the villages with their bowl and people put food in it. So it's important possession for the monastics. And so this monk had one, but it was an alms bowl that was given to him by the king. And it was made out of gold. So it was this renunciant, mendicant, poor person. Monks aren't supposed to have any wealth. But they're also not supposed to, it's okay to have gold. That gold bowl, if someone gives it to you, you use it. But he had this gold bowl. So one night, he laid himself down in a grove of trees to sleep with his bowl next to him. And a thief came lurking, through the woods and saw that gold bowl. That was pretty exciting. And he thought, I'll always wait for this monk to fall asleep. But before the monk fell asleep, he saw this thief kind of lurking behind the trees and eyeing the bowl. And so the monk said, hey, you, come here. Here, if you want this, you can have it. And gave it to him. And not a far-fetched idea. It's a little detour in the story. Ajahn Amaro is a monk who lived here in California for some, I don't know how many years, 17 years. So he taught here. He's a wonderful Englishman. And in the early 2000s, I think, or at some point, he had, I don't know if it was a smartphone yet, but it was like one of the early smartphones. He had this device that, was a telephone, of course, but he could do email on it and things. And it was kind of, expensive back then. It was kind of special. And he showed up, and I just had a little flip-up phone, whatever. And so he pulled out this, and he would use it and do email and stuff. And I knew it was very expensive. And so I asked him, what are you, a mendicant monk? What are you doing, with this expensive phone? You're supposed to live a life of poverty, kind of. And he said, this was a gift. Someone gave it to me. So I use it. But I use it always with the mind, if anybody asks me for it, I'll give it to them. I thought of it. Mostly to test him. So this monk with the golden bowl said, hey, thief, come over here. If you want this, I'll give it to you here. So the thief couldn't believe his luck. He took the bowl and he ran before he thought the monk would change his mind. And the monk went to sleep, had a peaceful sleep through the night. And in the morning, he woke up and there was a thief sitting nearby with the bowl. Said, I want to return this. And why? The monk said. Obviously, you seem to have all kinds of riches, inner wealth that I don't know about. And I want to come be your student so I can learn what that wealth is. Nice. So the idea of inner wealth. And this is in Buddhism, there's a lot of talk about inner wealth and cultivating that inner wealth, that inner well-being, that inner joy and compassion and peace and wisdom and just a lot of beautiful qualities. That's where our real wealth is. In fact, sometimes in Buddhism they say, that's the secure wealth. That's what will support you in all kinds of circumstances in a way that you, external wealth may or may not. So the practice of generosity. One of the reasons to practice generosity is that the Buddha said it unites friends. It brings people together and creates unity and harmony between people. And that's a good thing, to have harmony and unity in families and among our friends and our communities. And gift giving is one of those ways. It creates a connection. It has to be done with wisdom and care and sensitivity, because it's one of those channels through which our social relationships can be healthy and connected and involved. And American society, I think, many times I've been very inspired by how much our American society is built on generosity. And I saw it quite dramatically in a very inspired way as I was raising children. And my kids did all these things, like sports. And there's a huge pool of people out there, a huge number of people who are volunteering their time to coach and support and kids' soccer teams and baseball teams and all these things. And I've seen people put a tremendous amount of time into it, freely, just giving themselves to it. And I think it's an important part of our society that these children grow up with this kind of ability to be in the community and be supported by community and have connections and do the sports that they do. Or the tremendous number of parents nowadays who seem to be involved with the local schools. I think maybe because schools are more financially strapped than they used to be. When I went to school, it didn't seem like, I didn't know of any parents who were involved in school, but now it seems to be pretty common. And I'm so inspired by all these parents who get involved in, you know, all kinds of things at school, including the extracurricular things like theater. And they just give themselves. It's an act of generosity. They're supporting and making this thing happen. I think that if we start analyzing how much our society depends on people being generous and giving things without any monetary return, that it's probably maybe the biggest piece of the economy, I would guess. Some of you maybe saw the video, YouTube video in May, secretly videoed people being interviewed for particular job offering, and so people would come and come for the interview, and they didn't know much about the job. So part of the interview was eventually people would start asking like how much vacation time is there, and the interviewer said, oh, there's no vacation in this job. No vacation. They feel kind of look a little incredulous. Oh yeah, there's no vacation. Can't take any time off. And the job is 7 days a week. and you can't sit down. There's a lot of bending and standing up. And how many hours a day? Well, it's 24 hours a day. And the interviewer is quite, serious and professional, and sounds like a real job. And these people kind of like secretly being kind of like eyes go wide, like kind of incredulous. Some of them laugh. Some of them, different things. And it takes a while for them to realize that. And at some point, the interviewer says, "They're very incredulous. This can't be right." And the interviewer says, "Yes, it is. More than half of the human population on the globe does this job." And then they understand it's mothers. So the idea being that that motherhood is this act of generosity, of giving, that giving and giving and doesn't stop, and 24 hours a day. And so I don't know if you saw that, but I saw it. I was kind of touched by it. It came out on Mother's Day. So this idea of generosity is, makes our society go and support us. So when I'm out and about in the world now, I think in terms of generosity much more often than I used to. Excuse me. So here are some examples of it. I used to be very concerned about getting the cheapest possible price for whatever I was buying. And I used to be, like when I was in my 20s, I used to be a really hard bargainer in countries where you would go bargain for things. And I remember being proud of myself then for being in some countries and some bazaars where you'd bargain for different things. And I would bargain so hard and so successfully that the person who was selling would certainly sell it to me, but was angry. So I thought, I really got a good low price. But now I feel terrible about that. you know, that was the legacy that I left. Now I feel that I just want people to be successful and thrive in their lives. I want people that it's a big deal to get along in this life and have money to support your family and support yourself. And so now I'm not looking for the cheapest price so much anymore. I'm just, oh good, someone will benefit from this. Someone will benefit. And I'm sure some of you are skeptics. Well, yes, the big corporations or something, right? But, you know, it's just, it gets spread out, you know. I think more that way. I'm more interested in thinking that way than thinking, how do I get the best out of this? And so, you know, giving tips at restaurants about go eat out or, you know, all kinds of things. So now I don't worry so much if someone if I think someone is charging me too much, because sometimes I feel that people are charging me too much, I look at who they are and what likely lifestyles they have, and these people, it would be good for them to have more money. You know, maybe they're charging me more than what that person down the street's going to charge me, but, you know, this person has to get along in their life as well. And so I find that kind of thinking lifts me up, inspires me, kind of is very different, has a very different effect on me than the kind of calculation that involves, well, where can I get the cheapest possible thing? Another place where I do this kind of thinking is if I get a parking ticket, I just say, great. I get to support the local town. All these municipalities are struggling, they don't have enough money. And, you know, I've been using the parking spaces and, you know, situations here for a long time. And it just, you know, it's just great to be able to offer something back finally. So is that silly way of thinking? Yes, somebody says? Some of you are nodding, yes. Is that a silly way of thinking? Maybe. It's maybe. But look at how you think about it. What way of thinking do you have about those kinds of situations, and do you see it as being, you know, are you, you know, miserly, kind of all about me? Is it involved distrust for other people? Is it involved, you know, what kind of thinking supports the way you think about these kinds of situations? And I found that I feel much happier thinking about supporting the world and supporting others, and it's not all about me and what I need and what I should get. So the practice of generosity supports others, supports society, supports our community, brings people together, creates harmony, overcomes animosity, difficulty. The Buddha said that the practice of generosity is a way of overcoming your own hostility. If you have anger and hate, it's a way of overcoming it. So you might want to think about that next time you're angry with somebody. Many years ago, I read a study of a culture, a little tribe in the Philippines. It had been somewhat isolated for many years. I think I read this in the 1970s. And this was a little tribe that focused a lot on their dreams. Dreams were very important for them, and they'd come up in the morning, and at breakfast, the family would talk about their dreams they had. And one of the customs they had in this tribe was that if in a dream there was something scary or angry or conflictive with someone else in the village, then they would always go and give a gift to that person. Isn't that nice? So this idea of a gift, you know, society gets along, works better with gifts. And it doesn't have to be, you know, expensive gifts. Just asking somebody how they are, or a smile makes a big difference. The practice of generosity is also useful in order to understand ourselves better. It's one of those reference points, because sometimes the exploration of generosity, the consideration of being generous, or how we're not generous, can help reveal ways in which we're scared. There's the lack of generosity sometimes motivated by fear. The lack of generosity sometimes is motivated by miserliness, sense of scarcity, sense of protectedness. Sometimes it involves anger, Sometimes it involves all kinds of things that go on inside, clinging and attachment to things. So part of the function of the practice of generosity is to flush out these kinds of attitudes that we have that might go unnoticed. So to choose to practice generosity, even when you don't want to, is a way of understanding yourself better. Not to feel bad about yourself, but to understand yourself so you can take that into account and monitor it. And if something is not wise, then change it in a way that maybe is wiser. And so one of the practices, you know, to do in this regard is to take an amount of money. I don't know if it's $10 or $20 or $50 bill, and carry it around with you, $100 bill, whatever is meaningful for you. It causes you to kind of like, ugh. look for someone in the next week to give it to. And then see what happens as you carry that with you. You know, what thoughts come up and what concerns, what fears, you know, what comes up around this idea you're going to give someone a significant amount of money for you. Many years ago, there was a homeless man, I think he was homeless, on University Avenue in Palo Alto. And he asked me for money to buy some food. And I said to him, I looked at him and he kind of thought, you know, so I looked at him and said, okay, I happened to be going over to, I think it was McDonald's back then. I said, come, I'll buy you some food. And he looked me up and down, like checking me out. And then he said, okay, I trust you. I said, what? And that helped me understand myself. And, you know, I'd checked him out. Can I trust him? And I thought I was a good person. And I had all these, you know, probably unexamined attitudes about generosity in him. And when he said, well, I'll trust you, I said, wow, there's more going on here than meets the eye. There's a deeper connection, deeper relationship. There's something going on with me that's important. I need to look at myself as well. Another time I gave, I did the same thing to someone here in Redwood City. And I even invited him to come and eat with us. He said, no, I'll eat outside. And then when I left, he was waiting for me. And he said, I'm a poet. And thanks for what you did, for the meal you gave us. I would like to read one of my poems to you. And he had these pieces of brown garbage, shopping bags, paper shopping bags, that he had written poems on. And it was an exquisite poem. I was moved by this poem. This guy was a really good poet. And that was, by the time I came out of the restaurant, I'd forgotten about him. So to practice generosity, to learn about yourself. And as you learn about yourself, to start making choices about how do you want to think about things? What are the motivations you want to act on? What do you want to change about yourself as you learn about yourself? That's part of what Buddhist practice is about. The other reason to do it as a practice is to give, to try to be generous and give in a generous way, is to cultivate good memories, to cultivate a reservoir of memories that you're capable of doing good in the world, good memories, things that bring you joy and happiness, to cultivate a stronger sense of connection to others. There's all these good qualities that cultivate and developed besides generosity when we act on generosity. Practicing generosity also develops further generosity. You become generous by being generous. And this is considered a very good thing in Buddhism. For people who do the Buddhist practice of liberation, the practice of generosity is very significant because generosity involves giving something up. And giving something up is a beautiful term. My understanding is originally that expression, giving something up, was meant offering it up at the altar. So to give something up, not to be diminished, but actually to do something almost sacred, to give something up, but to let go, to not hold on tightly to things. And there's no liberation in Buddhism if we're holding on tightly. And so to begin exploring this interface between holding on and letting go, to begin exercising the muscle of letting go so that we can learn more and more to let go and not hold on. If you want to become liberated and try to hold on tight, cling to things, there's no possibility of liberation. So as we begin to process of letting go that Buddhism teaches, generosity is one of those areas where we're up against the edge of what we feel is safe, our fear, our wisdom, our understanding of what's going on, our consideration, is it okay to let go? Is it okay to give my iPhone away? Is it okay to give my golden bowl away? Is it okay to stop and someone's asking food and invite them to have lunch with me? Are these okay? You know, how does this work? And there's a lot of deep conditioning we have that keeps us stuck, keeps us attached, keeps us clinging. And so the practice of generosity pushes us against that edge and keeps us questioning and wondering and exploring. What is this edge? How can I go further? Is it okay to let go? How can I let go in a useful way? How can I give in a useful way? And this practice of generosity and letting go should never be an obligation, but rather it's meant to help cultivate a beautiful mind. Buddhism, the expression "a beautiful mind" in Buddhism has to do with a mind that's moving and developing itself in the direction of liberation. And so that's where the wealth is, or the real adornment is in the mind, as the mind becomes freer, as the mind becomes more peaceful, as the mind, or the heart if you prefer, becomes more generous, more compassionate, more open, less protected. And so the practice of generosity is meant to move us in that direction. So in this regard, a king once asked the Buddha, who should I be generous to? And the Buddha said, to whoever you're inspired. I like this idea. Wherever you have confidence, depending on the translation. So if you have confidence and inspiration, that's really part of the food and fuel for real generosity. The practice of generosity, the practice of giving, sometimes you do things, you give as a practice even when you're not inspired, just because you want to explore that. It's, you know, you want to explore the territory and do things. But real generosity, as I said earlier, is to give in situations where it's not expected. To give beyond the expected amount. To give beyond, give into situations where it's, you know, a surprise to people, or that people feel grateful. Someone recently told me that that when they give their practice of generosity, they operate under the principle they give so they have no regrets. They give so they have no regrets. And the beauty that the person said about this guideline is that if you give too little, you can have regrets. But if you give too much, you can have regrets. You can have regrets about yourself. You have to take care of yourself. You're not supposed to just kind of give everything away. You have to take care of yourself as well. So, but to give no regrets, no regrets you gave too little, no regrets you gave too much, that helps you find just the sweet spot, you know, where it's nice to give. So the last, second part of giving is not giving that has to do with a practice, but the giving that involves the natural goodness of the heart, the mind, than expressing it. And that's really where giving, in Buddhism we talk about, that's when there's no giver, no giving, and no receiver. It's just kind of like, this is what you want to do. There's an open feeling, there's nothing is held on to, there's no fear, there's no miserliness, there is just a feeling of interconnectedness with others, feeling perhaps that what is yours is not yours. You don't have that even idea it's yours. it belongs to everyone. I think Ajahn Amaro, who was willing to give his iPhone away or smartphone away, I don't think he was thinking about it as his phone. Or the famous story, I like to say, of Suzuki Roshi, one of the reasons so famous or well known is that there's a photograph of him just as he's saying this thing. The photograph was him holding out his glasses like this in front of him, like, you know, foot away from his nose, holding it up, and he's leaning forward. And he said at that time, "These glasses are not my glasses. But you know about my tired old eyes, so you let me use them." It's a different attitude, right? Rather than mine, 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 mine. So I think as we become more free, more liberated, I think the idea of clinging to the notion of mine, me, myself, and mine, lessens and lessens and lessens. And when we don't have that kind of clinging, and when there's kindness, there's generosity, there's goodness, there's openness, I don't think that giving becomes something that's so much a doing. It's just kind of what happens here. You know, it's not, you know, we're all in it together. We're all sharing. I had a little taste of that when I was 17. When I spent the summer kind of like a hippie, or a hippie. Jerry Garcia once claimed that there were only 50 true hippies in the United States. This was in like 1967 or something. He had interviewed only 50 or something, 100 or something. So, anyway, I was what I was. But we had a little commune on wheels in a little Volkswagen van, and my four friends and I traveled around Europe and sleeping in the van, and we hardly had any money, and I think I had $50 for the summer. And so it was great, this little commune on wheels, and we shared everything. Whatever little money we had, we shared, and there was no sense it was mine and yours. It was like we're all in it together. And the sense of sharing and being connected and all, you know, even sharing is not even right, right? Sharing means you have to share. We were we, and it was all our stuff, and we took care of each other that way. So that was very nice. And then I went back to high school in Los Angeles with my friends. And then I started hanging out with my friends again, and we'd go around and do different things in L.A. And I remember once when one of my friends said, "Well, I don't have enough money to buy a hamburger at the hamburger joint where we're going to buy." And I said, "Oh, I'll buy it. I have money." And he said, "No." You know, somehow that was taboo to, you know, maybe because he felt it was exchange, he had to repay me later or something. And I'd just come from the summer in Europe where there was no you and me and mine. Just like, this is what we do. And my friends had these very strong boundaries. And it was painful to come back to L.A. and feel this very different culture of boundaries and me and myself. So generosity is considered the foundation of Buddhist spiritual path. I think it supports the path in many ways. It points and supports to a liberated heart, a heart that doesn't cling to anything, that's open and to the world. It's a wonderful thing. It requires a lot of wisdom. It's one of the ways to cultivate wisdom, because you can't just give naively. You have to be considered and wise about it. And there are different kind of economies in our society. There are gift economies, and there are non-gift economies. And so, commercial economies, and how these work together, how they support each other, how they both have wisdom and both have their place, is one of the interface between them is a very interesting area. And it's been very exciting for me to see how in the last, I don't know, 20 years or so, that the gift economy, the open source economy, seems to have been enabled by our technological revolution in some ways. And there are lots of places in our society, on the web, in different places, like Wikipedia and other places, where all this stuff is made available for free that before you had to pay for. And I think it's a really great thing our society is doing, what's going on. I don't know if it's going to peter out and be relegated to the corners of our economy. But to me, it's very exciting. And I think that for us to articulate and have a better understanding about the philosophy and the wisdom of the practice of generosity, of being open and giving, is one of the great tasks for our society right now, because of, you know, the potential we have of the mutual support and openness and how that helps us all thrive. So two forms of generosity: the generosity of as a practice, it's a worthwhile practice to take on, to give, and the generosity that comes out of the goodness of your hearts. And that requires that you recognize the goodness, make space for it. And you all have it. You all have abundance of goodness in there. It might be a little bit overlooked. But if you learn to recognize it and relax into it, I think you'll find that you'll become more generous in a way that's supportive and meaningful, nourishing for you as well. So thank you all.